Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
High atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Mr. Big Jim Willig, sitting in for Don Taylor today. Jim Willig is, even as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Ohio woman Stephanie Ribbonette sprayed police with breast milk after a fight with her husband. Non-rapture teasing led to Eugene shooting. And court papers say suspect was paid to kill the beauty salon owner.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, a heed for this. This is Legion of News. Hello, Big Jim Willig.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I want to thank you for stepping in for Don Taylor today.
Not a problem at all. Whenever I can, I love to sit in and try on the shoes of a professional newswoman. Walk around, see how they accentuate my calves and posterior.
What is the shirt that you're wearing today?
It is a casual, just a basic shirt with a little design of a hula gal.
Oh, I see. It's a grayscale nymph.
It is.
Okay, for a minute I thought that you and I were, I very nearly wore a shirt that looks very similar to that, and then it would have been like, you know, like
before
a cocktail party
picture?
Where we just have to, we have to stay at opposite ends of the shindig all night so that we don't...
Maintaining a lack of eye contact.
Yeah, like we stumbled in through a wormhole at the same time or something. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. It is Tuesday, June 28th, 2011, and sitting into the news desk for Don Taylor, here is Mr. Big Jim Willig.
An Ohio woman attempted to fight off police trying to remove her from her car by spraying them with what? Breast milk, of course. Stephanie Ribbonette got into a fight with her husband while attending a wedding at the Bridgewater Banquet and Conference Center in the city of Delaware on Sunday. Her husband told police his 30-year-old wife struck him several times, then locked herself in the vehicle. When deputies attempted to remove Ribbonette from the vehicle, she advised the deputies that she was a breastfeeding mother. As deputies went to restrain her, Ribbonette said, proceeded to remove her right breast from her dress and began spraying the deputies and the vehicle with the breast milk.
I wonder if the vehicle spraying was inadvertent, if that's a sort of collateral damage, like with Agent Orange.
You can't make an omelet without, you know, horrifying passersby.
It's the scorched earth policy.
Yes. Additional deputies arrived and eventually pried her from the car before placing her under arrest.
The jaws of life. By the way, have you seen the photograph?
I have not.
Okay, so if you go to rickemerson.com/pictures and then go to visual aids for June 28th, you can see a picture of a... Let me just tell you, by the way, this is... I mean, I don't know how much was coming out, but the factory itself is rather large. So it's... She's not an unattractive woman. And obviously there's some structural engineering to her shirt that accentuates her cleavage, but I'm suspecting that there's a large origination point for the milk anyway.
Yeah, it just gives a hint of cleavage, but it is very much like, yeah, you can tell that this is some Grand Teton.
This is what scientists would call the kind of sugar Papa likes.
That's the clinical name for this. I'm a fan. This is one of those things where it's like if what was required, you know, if what you had to endure to spend some biblical, capital B biblical time with if, in other words, if that was part of the package, I think I'd be okay with that.
I would too.
I could roll with that.
It's funny because guys stereotypically will put up with a lot of mess, a lot of crazy.
Yeah.
When the package, and that's the thing, is crazy comes in some really nice packaging a lot of times.
It really does.
So I mean, if you know, she could probably be a good singer. Maybe she's into a lot of like the similar TV shows and movies that you are too, and on occasion happens to have a minor mood swing wherein bodily fluids get sprayed out, because much like a cornered rattler, you know, this is how she lashes back at an unforgiving world.
She's like that reptile they have in Mexico City that can shoot blood from its eyes.
The chupacabra, or is that another?
No, there's like a little gecko type of thing, but if you get too close to it, it has a concentrated stream of its own blood that it can shoot out from its eyes to momentarily blind predators.
How would one come? I mean, I'm assuming like this isn't like after you've already stepped on it.
No, I'm assuming that it really exists. It's a thing that I read in a science textbook when I was a kid, because they were talking about some of the bizarre behaviors in the reptile kingdom, and one of them is that there's that lizard that, like, if you step on the tail, like, it can actually, like, just, the tail can actually snap off and it can regenerate it later, but it's like a breakaway tail. So, like, trying to grab a guy by a prosthetic arm, and he goes, aha, yoink, and he runs away. But then there was this lizard that could actually spray a concentrated mist of its own blood, and it would sort of cloud and disorient the attackers, and then it could, you know, I must away, and then it would run. And so she's
Don't
like
you
that.
Think it would be kind of blinded by its own blood, so its escape would be kind of like foiled.
You think, you know, but maybe it's just sort of the octopus, sort of, you know, maybe it's not like not smelling your own body odor.
Yeah, it's like just when you think that humans have the market cornered on just kind of weirdness.
No,
you know, the animal kingdom just sort of like chuckles to itself.
No,
like, please.
You know, and then there's like some weird fish that glows from the inside, and you know, and sweats cheese.
Well, we don't know about it because it lives in the Mariana Trench.
That's what I'm saying. So this, so I give a big thumbs up to Stephanie Robinette.
this is awesome. The best quote of the day had to come from one of the officers that said, "This is a prime example of how alcohol can make individuals do things they would not normally do."
You know, how do we know that she wouldn't normally do this? Is the thing, I think,
based on like the look on her face. With the in the picture on RickEmerson.com, she has the look of like, I will do this again.
Seriously, I've done it before, and I'm probably going to do it, you know, before the day is out.
As long as my body secretes something, back off.
Here's the thing. Here's what's so hot about her. She's so clearly and obviously just trash.
Yeah.
I mean, that really is just, that is the single most alluring aspect that really, all things being equal, that any woman can have, in my estimation.
See her at the bar playing touch poker, pick her up with a dollar PBR pounder.
You just got that little touch of Luann Hill. That is, Rick Emerson is a big fan of that. I got to say, you have to admire her aim, too, that she's able to. Because it's like, I can't even throw a baseball correctly and get it anywhere near the strike zone. Meanwhile, she is able to navigate this weird, fleshy water weenie that's on the front of her, while also, I guess, the cops are trying to wrestle her out of the car. And then presumably there's a kid around somewhere, because she's, right?
Well,
she's not just like putting that milk for no reason.
There's nothing really in they get the child out of the story for protection purposes. And if you know anything about breast milk, and I do, we all do at some point. But no, there isn't just like one nozzle. It isn't just like a straightforward stream. There are it's a gland, so there isn't really any kind of rhyme or reason. You don't have like a little crosshairs on the end of the areola that you can aim at. It's pretty much just no.
It just, what is your boob just sweats milk or something?
In a sense, there's kind of like a grouping of glands in that particular area of the body, and it just kind of comes out in like a kind of a Warner Brothers guy who's been shot many times through a glass of water kind of a way.
It's not like it's not like a water weenie.
Mm-mm.
It's like that water willy thing that had all the antenna that flap around and that spray out water in various. It's like a rainbird.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
If that would give any more of a clarification, I actually just go to the website, check out the picture, because
seriously, that's at RickEmerson.com/pictures. Visual aids for June 28th. And now I've just got the Rolling Stones in my head singing that she's like a rainbird. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or legionofnews.com. You can also get it at iTunes or on your mobile device. It is mobile.cascadia.fm. At the news desk here is Big Jim Willie.
Well, some non-rapture teasing led to a shooting in Eugene. The motive in a workplace shooting in Eugene, reportedly the ribbing one employee took from a co-worker after the predicted May 21st rapture failed to occur. The mother of the victim told the Register Guard that her son said Dale O'Connahan took it personally when he was needled about his belief that he would be taken to heaven by the return of J.C. Jesus Christ. Callahan is accused of shooting Jerry Andrews on Friday at the LHM Hydraulics, where they worked. Andrews suffered a fractured shoulder.
It seems like somebody's needling you over your belief that you're going to go to heaven. That's a thing that you can just let time fix for you.
Yeah.
You know, okay, that's great, unbeliever. You know, and then, you know, in like 2 days, you know, the problem is solved.
Yeah, and in the words of Bill Hicks, isn't forgiveness part of your bag? I mean, isn't it kind of like rule number like one or two?
And also, like, you know, that's like a guy like challenging me to a fist fight next week when I'm leaving, you know, for Cabo tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'll see you there, jackass, you know? Oh, yeah, you're going to beat my ass.
Yeah, you better call your buddies. Sorry. Call them all. Yeah. Call every last one of them.
Yeah, I just, it seems like you could just wait it out, although I guess I can buy a ticket and actually go to Cabo. I guess that would be the difference.
But the guy who predicted that the rapture was going to occur on May 21st, a couple things wrong with that. First of all, in the Bible, it states, and this isn't me quoting specifically, but it says that no man shall know the time
that
or
is true.
Date.
That is true, yes. I mean, the day of the Lord cometh like a thief in the night.
Absolutely. So there's that problem. And second of all, this is dudes like strike six or seven at predicting the actual rapture. He's already just taken a couple swings blindly, and it's kind of ironic that God kind of keeps this guy alive just so that he can be like, no. It's okay, now it's going to be October. It's going to be October. God kind of had a thing. He had some relatives come in from out of town. He's got to set up a cot in the guest room. Big hassle.
Do
whatever.
We know the nature of the rapture teasing? I mean...
No, basically just said that he was giving him some grief over the fact that, well, you know, hey, you said that you were going to put off that report until Monday. Here's the thing, banking on the fact that God was going to take you out on Saturday.
Somebody says here in the text box, and I don't know if this is actually true, or here's how absurd the story is. I don't know if this is true or if this is somebody's just estimation of how it happened. Somebody says, yeah, they just kept coming back to his work area over and over again saying, you still here? Just checking. Lol. And I don't know whether that's true or not. It seems like that could actually very easily be the precise nature of the teasing. Oh, hey, did you see Bob? Oh, there's Bob. Well, Bob, that's strange. I thought you were going to heaven. Okay, I'll come back later and check.
What do you mean you need your bus pass for the rest of the month? What are you talking about? Come on, buckaroo.
I'm just going to take your stuff if it's okay. It's all right. You don't need the staple remover, do you? That's great.
Can you think, though, about all the other people that was it. They had planned... They had it in their mind that okay, after, you know, after the 21st, I'm set. I'm taken care of. Me and the Lord, gonna be kicking up in heaven. Kirk Cameron. Did anybody get Kirk Cameron's response?
No. See, I don't know why like some Michael Moore guy didn't track a bunch of these people for like an instant documentary, and then you do like a day after, sort of a hey, how's that working out kind of a thing.
Wrap it up or some kind of, you know, catchy name for it.
I remember where this is back in '96 when Clinton and Dole were running in the presidential in the general election and. And Tom Likas, who was doing his talk show at that time, you know, Likas said what kind of everybody knew, which is that there's no way Bob Dole is going to win. It's not going to happen ever, ever, ever. It's never going to happen. That Clinton was just an absolute lock for a second term. He was an absolute shoo-in. And he had, you know, and there were people calling up and saying that, you know, America was tired of Clinton and it was time for a change and Republican revolution and blah, 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 and Bob Dole. And so Clinton, Likas did this great thing where for like 2 weeks leading up to the election, you know, he asked people to call up if they were absolutely positively convinced that Dole was going to win the election and that Clinton was not. And he said, if you're absolutely positively convinced, it's like, here's the deal. It's like, I will come on the air the next day. I will call you and I will, you know, at home and I will plead abject ignorance and I will apologize to you on the air. if Clinton loses. But you have to be willing to make the same deal. You have to give me your phone number, and you have to be willing to come on the air. And then he just spent the most glorious 2 days of nothing for like an hour every day calling people at home and just making and deriding them mercilessly. And it was just awesome. It was it was so such deeply satisfying radio. And so that they should have totally done it with the Rapture guys.
Yeah.
You know, and by they, I mean I have failed you. I have let down everyone because we should have done that.
Well, hindsight's 20/20. The good news is, based on the fact that, like I said, this is strike number 7.
Yeah.
The next one's coming up in, I believe it's October.
So Rapture 8.0 will be released, and that's the one that's going to fix all the bugs.
This time they mean it. Time it's personal.
Yeah, that's the security update that really is going to close all the glitches.
Well, the good news is that the 39-year-old Callahan is held in the Lane County Jail on assault charges. Here's the thing, though. What is it? Love thy neighbor? That's kind of one of the big ones, big 10, top 10.
Don't punch thy neighbor in the face.
Or shoot him in the shoulder, what have you.
That too.
Does this exclude him from potential future Rapture reindeer games?
What is the guy's name?
The guy's name is, let's see here, O'Callahan.
I'm trying to see if we have a photo of him, but I keep getting distracted by the breast check. Hey, Peter!
Dale O'Callahan.
All right, yeah, so... It's you can set your calendar, I guess, for what, October? That's the next
go
around
here. October 21st.
All right. Hold on, I'm gonna put that in my iCal. Wait just a second here. Let me just load that up. October 21st. Okay. Hey, and that's a Friday too. So I mean,
hey now.
One way or the other, we either end the week strong or we have merriment to go into the weekend.
4-day weekend, buddy.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. All right, fantastic. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. We are here with Mr. Big Jim Willig. This is Legion of News at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today we have a clown watch, I believe. We have something. I believe you have a clown watch, and I believe I have a geek watch for next hour. Also, Mr. Ryan White, music editor from The Oregonian, is going to be in the studio with us. Here is Big Jim Willig for Don Taylor.
Thank you very much. A woman accused of killing a Gladstone beauty salon owner was paid money to commit the slaying, according to an indictment filed yesterday in Clackamas County. Susan Campbell, 54, was arrested yesterday on a charge of murder. Most foul. Her trial is set for next month. She's being held in the death of 54-year-old Debbie Hybe Benton, who was found dead inside her shop in Gladstone on May 28th. The court documents say Campbell did unlawfully and intentionally pursuant to an agreement that defendant received money for doing so because of the death.
So she was going to kill a guy, or she tried to hire a guy to kill a guy?
She basically said that she had pursuant to an agreement. So I would imagine
she was out looking for a guy to get to whack somebody on her behalf.
Yeah, but she's the woman was found dead, so
obviously. Oh, I see. So she did, in fact.
Mm-hmm. Investigators say that Campbell provided hospice-type care for relatives in Hybe Benton's domestic partner, Gladstone Police. That sentence didn't seem to make any sense.
There's not even an actual sentence there. There was no moving parts.
Some delicious sentence fragments were plastered together here.
Incidentally, you can see the photo. What is her first name? Ms. Campbell. Her first name is...
Susan Campbell. 54.
Susan Campbell. You can see her at rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids for June 28th. She looks like every one of my grandfather's girlfriends when he was alive. And they were all named Betty. And every woman that my grandfather dated looked exactly like Susan Campbell. And by which I mean that if you were to take that James Gum guy from Silence of the Lambs and then age him and stick him in a bad wig and powder him up and then view him through some horrible Photoshop filter... that was just designed, to suck out your life force.
I feel like I should be giving her my order at a truck stop.
Totally, that's exactly what she's. She looks like asking if you want extra grits on the side, hon. Freshen up your margarita.
Police don't want to release any details about the search warrant because of the ongoing investigation.
Everybody in the news today looks weird. I'm looking at the visual aids. There's Stephanie Robinette, who's weird for being so relatively hot-looking compared to everybody else. And then the rest of the visual aids, it's just like a parade of just wrinkles and bruises. So we'll get to all of the related stories. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Let's see. We have somewhere in that pile over there, we have in the sound pile, there is some Michelle Bachmann sound
That
we should get to in just a moment. Coming up next hour, we have a Geek Watch coming up, also a Clown Watch coming up next hour, plus Mr. Ryan White, music editor from the Oregonian, will be joining us in the studio. That is at RickEmersonShow.com. That is coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. Did I not actually hand that to you? Is that a thing
I thought
about handing to you and then failed to do?
Yeah, I got it. Okay. I got it right here, my hot little hands. Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, who officially entered the Republican race for president, Monday explains that she feels that she can beat President Obama.
And President Obama said himself in February of 2009, if he can't turn the economy around by the third year of his presidency, that he should be a one-term president. I agree with him. I think he should be a one-term president.
I demand that this barge be turned instantly. Now!
Yeah, after it being driven so deeply, so completely, so heartfeltly into the ground.
That is, the thing about it is, that's what sucks about, like, taking over from a guy who just bungled the entire mess.
Yeah.
Is that then suddenly he's gone, you know, and you're just standing there going, ah, crap. Yeah. You know, it's like buying a store that, it's like buying a store that was just looted and burned and bespoiled. And then you're just there with a broom in the middle of it looking around going, well, Christ, now I guess I've got to clean it.
Yeah. But Bachmann responds to criticism that she is prone to misstatements, especially regarding President Obama.
And killers who dress as clowns. Did you hear the Gacy thing yesterday?
No.
Oh, my God, dude, it's the best thing ever. So she announced her presidency officially yesterday in Waterloo, Iowa. And she made the statement. She said, you know, I'm proud to be from, you know, to be announcing my candidacy here in Waterloo, which is, I guess, maybe, I think it's where her parents were from. And she said a lot of great Americans were born here. This is, this has produced a lot of great, iconic pillars in our country's history, such as, and then she said, such as John Wayne. And it wasn't John Wayne, it's John Wayne Gacy is from there. His killing
church,
there.
You know.
Yeah. And it was like the only thing that would have been better is if she had actually said John Wayne Gacy. Like, that's the only way. If she had just somehow managed to actually say, great Americans such as John Wayne Gacy, and we weren't given that, but she did. She did say, you know, the Americans from Waterloo, including John Wayne from here. And you know that was an advance guy that at the last moment she must have just said, like, get on Google, find me somebody who was born here. And he just went to Google and didn't bother to click on the result. He just read that little synopsis that shows up, like the first, like where it gives you the first 10 words of the page. And he went, John Wayne, great. And he wrote it on an index card and handed it to her. Let's see. This is the second. What is the sound? The setup for the second bite here.
Basically responds that she's prone to misstatements.
Yes. Of course, they were just misspeaking, and that happens. People can make mistakes, and I wish I could be perfect every time I say something, but I can't. But one thing people know about me is that I'm a substantive, serious person.
Look, who hasn't mentioned a sodomizing clown by mistake?
I mean, really.
I'm only human. What do you want from me?
How many high school graduation valedictorian speeches were not just riddled with John Wayne Gacy references? Do you think, though, that Michelle is just kind of like a, they're trying to, they obviously can't use Palin. Palin has kind of like set that barge aflame, and there's just no salvaging it. Do you think, though, that Michelle is kind of like their attempt at, you know, like, well, we definitely want to throw a lady into the ring this time because we feel that that's pretty much the only way you're going to be able to beat, you know, a dead Osama bin Laden. We need a female to kind of, like, to weather that shit.
I think that Michelle Bachmann is, I think that my theory is that the Republican power structure, to whatever degree that there's any sort of unity there, that they realize, as you said, that they need somebody unconventional to win. And they went, well, we can't use Sarah Palin because, A, she's crazy, and B, doesn't seem to listen to, I mean, for good or bad, doesn't seem to listen to anybody at all. I mean, she, whatever one thinks of Sarah Palin,
she's a rogue.
She does seem to call her own shots. I mean, however bright or stupid she may be, it doesn't really seem like anybody can tell her what to do. She does have her own, she and her small inner circle have their own sort of agenda, and they don't. I think something that you can say about Sarah Palin that is legitimately true, which is that she does not seem to follow the staid political path of conventional behavior. And so I think Michelle Bachmann is trying to position herself as, well, look, I've got a vagina, and I can be told what to do. I won't upset anybody or be interesting or unconventional in any way. So she is the Pat Boone to Sarah Palin's Little Richard.
Wow.
That's okay. What I'm saying right there. So
Until they get the talking dog bugs worked out, yeah. Which I'm sure is pretty much all they're like, okay, we need a magical talking dog that can help the Angels win a pennant.
I think that's got to be it, is that she's, you know, is that on the surface, she kind of looks different, but doesn't actually ever run any risk of saying anything unpredictable or doing anything other than what she is instructed to do.
Yeah.
So she's, I believe she is, in fact, just some kind of fembot that they put up as a way to distract people from Sarah Palin.
It's obviously always been like, just like puppet on the left, puppet on the right. Which one do you really kind of want? But at least give us the illusion that there is something a little bit more than just, you know, you standing there with somebody else kind of cranking words into your back like a Teddy Ruxpin.
I think somewhere they must be trying to grow like the perfect candidate in a lab somewhere. Like there must be some kind of white coat trying to grow like, you know, like a gay black female Jewish, crippled Republican.
Former veteran who
also can't form their own thoughts, you know, or cogency on anything.
See, we'll take the clubbed hand of Bob Dole. We'll take the military background of McCain.
It's like a minority Republican Serpentor.
Taking the DNA.
Totally.
So he'll come flying in on a giant snake chariot, telling everyone that this is what he commands.
With the cunning of Hannibal. That's the only part I remember from the Serpentor commercial, is that he has the cunning of Hannibal. That's it. That's all I know. I'm going to find a Serpentor commercial, and we're going to use it to start the Rick Emerson Show. That's coming up next hour. You're listening to Legion of News. Let's do one more, and then we'll move to science.
All righty. Policeman keeps driving on I-45 with pedestrian in windshield. This seems to be like the new hotness. Driver.
instead of fuzzy dice. Yeah, do you have a homeless guy?
Well, my homeless guy's got two teeth. A driver who hit a pedestrian along Interstate 45 in southeast Houston early this morning didn't stop, even though the victim smashed the windshield and landed in the front passenger seat,
wow.
Officials say. The driver, identified as 45-year-old James John Onick, was charged with felony failure to stop and render aid and misdemeanor of tampering with evidence.
Not charged with hitting a guy?
No, that's fine.
He just didn't stop.
Yeah. Or, render aid at all. The collision occurred in the 12,000 block of southbound Gulf Freeway near Fumca. It's around about 12:30.
Near where?
Fumqua. F-U-Q-U-A.
Is this anywhere near where we are?
This is in Texas, I believe.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Tuesday, according to the Houston Police Department. Police say the 32-year-old victim, whose name has not been released, died at the scene.
The scene seems to be a relative sort of...
Yeah, pretty much. Is it like
the scene's here.
Miles?
Now it's there. Now it's over there.
Slowly. The scene just passed its exit. No injuries were reported. That seems to be rather curious.
Really? There's a guy in your windshield.
He died of natural causes.
Either the...
He died like he lived.
It was his time.
Yeah.
Either the windshield is real flimsy, or, I mean, also, aren't the windshields designed so they can't, like, you can't go through them now? They just sort of, they shatter, but they stay together or something?
I think it's traditional debris, like, you know, like sticks or maybe like a retread kind of coming
out. Maybe not
at
a guy.
Not a dude.
Yeah.
Not a dude. Maybe he's a sharp-dressed man.
Not dude-proof.
No. Police said a man was driving his Ford, and it's an Explorer, too, on the freeway. When it broke down, he pulled to the shoulder and got out and began trying to cross the freeway, which is always a good idea. The man was hit by a black Mazda driven by Onick. Police said that the collision forced the victim's body through the windshield, and he landed in the front passenger seat inside the car.
Hello.
I bet you his first question was, do you have any spare change? Onick did not stop after the collision. Police said that allegedly got off the freeway and drove for a few blocks before Precinct 8 Harris County Constable pulled him over. And the deputy noticed that the car's front was damaged just a wee bit.
There seems to be something obstructing your windshield, sir.
Police said that Onick told the deputy that he had hit something on the freeway. They didn't know
he hit something.
That the victim was in the passenger seat beside him.
This is the best story ever.
Onick was believed to be under the influence, and a mandatory blood draw was taken. Police are still investigating the case.
Does that mean that there was originally somebody else in the passenger seat that he lost? And that's why he didn't notice. It's like when Indy substitutes the bag of sand for the idol. Mom? Well, there's somebody there.
Like it's like a tissue, like you take one out and there's another one just pops in instantly.
If you didn't notice that there was somebody just in the passenger seat, I mean, maybe that was like he left somebody behind at a rest station somewhere and forgot about it.
How many bleeding victims does he of hit and runs does he have just riding shoddy in his Mazda?
I don't know. I mean,
Mazda's not a big car either. You're going to know when, you know, there's somebody sitting next to you dead or dying.
So I like the idea that he didn't pull over either, that the cops finally just said, there seems you've got a little something here.
Not so much here or here.
I believe that your view might be impaired slightly by this guy who's...
Oh, no, it was the car was like this when I bought it. I bought it at an auction. they said that there was some front-end cosmetic issue.
Just so I can use the carpool lane. It's not even real. Jesus.
See, look at him. Look at him. You can't shake, you can't shake a real dude and have this happen. This is totally... This is aftermarket.
You have to be hitting a guy real fast, I would think, for him to go all the way through the windshield. And also, the guy has to be angled just right. It's because otherwise you belly flop right off the surface, I would imagine.
Yeah. I'm thinking, well, it would have to be lowered because he'd have to get clipped right at the knees to kind of render him in like a horizontal position to go through the windshield. And then, like, I'm surprised the seat didn't rip out altogether.
It almost seems like this is sort of like dolphins when they're bouncing a ball back and forth. It almost seems like you have to have one car get him airborne.
Yeah.
So he's horizontal. And then another car comes along just in time to whoosh, through the, you know, because otherwise it seems, it seems you're just going to ricochet off that. So,
but maybe maybe the vehicle itself was lowered. But the windshield issue really kind of strikes me as curious. Perhaps it was previously cracked or damaged in some way.
Maybe
this guy doesn't strike me as the most safest or sound of drivers.
Maybe at the last moment the guy thought, you know, I know how I'll avoid, I'll jump. And so that's why he cleared the grill and the hood altogether, didn't quite clear the glass portion of the car.
What's his name from Sin City? Like Marv.
Exactly.
Just trying to like pull that maneuver, like, not quite so much.
Yeah, you know, thinking like, you know, the elevator is crashing to the ground, I'll jump up at the last second, you know, but instead, through the windshield.
Well, live and learn.
Do we have science news of any kind?
We
that
do.
Is set aside. Let's do this. This is your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them at SquiresElectric.com or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. You can also call them if you like. It is 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. Find out more about them. They can come to your home or business, and they can deal with all of your wires or wiring in terms of installation, repair, upgrade, or making sure that you pass your upcoming inspection so that you don't bring shame and disgrace upon the house of Euripides. That is 503-252-1609. Here is Mr. Big Jim Willigan for Don Taylor with your Science on the March.
The story seems quite timely considering the 4th of July weekend coming up. But Stone Age barbecue leftovers from the prehistoric age discovered. Stone Age barbecue consumers first went for the bone marrow and then for the ribs, suggests the leftovers of an outdoor 7,000-year-old meaty feast described by in the July issue of the Journal of Archaeological Science. The remains found in the valley in the Netherlands provided direct evidence for a prehistoric hunting, butchering, cooking, and feasting event. The meal occurred more than 1,000 years before the first farmers and domestic cattle arrived in the region.
Did they also find evidence of ancient men standing around in a circle arguing about the best way to get like the coals smoldering just right? You got to use a coffee can.
No.
Oh, you're an idiot.
I prefer propane. Although basic barbecue technology hasn't changed over the millennia, the prehistoric meal centered around the flesh of a wild ox of some sort that was larger than today's cows. It sported distinctive curved horns. Another big difference is how meat was obtained then, obviously. The animal was either caught in a pitfall trap and then clubbed on the head or shot with a bow and arrow with flint point. Says one of the professors of archaeological studies at the University of Groningen, Netherlands.
Is it one of those things where there's like a zero with a line through it?
There's like four consonants in a row.
Groningen,
told Discovery News. But
they just found like it was like a fire pit where they would say like, you know what would be really great if we had some of that fire. And if you mix the fire with whatever this is. Because we're the only, I believe we're the only creature that cooks things, right?
Yes, pretty much everything else, all the other carnivores like there's tartar.
Yeah, so, I guess that makes sense, because if that wasn't the case, it would mean that whales had learned how to use fire, and that would be weird.
According to the study, the individuals skinned the animal and butchered it, reserving the skin and large hunks of the meat for carrying back to a nearby settlement. Chop marks left behind by the flint bow show how the meat was meticulously separated from the bones and removed. Blade perhaps worn down from such cuttings was left behind, slightly scorched in the cooking fire.
And by the way, I wanted you to see, several people have done this. I want you to know that I did not make the obligatory joke when you said it was a pitfall trap. I didn't go,
Which, I think four of us would have gotten that.
Uncanny reference. But everybody who laughed at that, the four people who got it would have thought that was, dude, that was awesome. I really would have registered high with those four dudes. Here is Mr. Big Jim Willie with your Science on the March.
Human magnetism. In the X-Men comic books, Magneto fights by controlling magnetic fields. Now a new study suggests that perhaps non-villains can sense magnetic fields as well. Fruit flies can use a protein abundant in people's retinas to sense magnetic fields.
I don't want a fruit fly using something in my retina.
No. Scientists at the University of Massachusetts Medical School in Worcestershire reported on June 21st in Natural Communications. Researchers swapped a human light-sensing molecule called a cryptohome with the fly's own magnetic field-sensing protein. The human protein allowed the flies to distinguish between high and normal magnetic fields. The results revived the controversial debate over whether humans can detect magnetic fields, the author writes.
And also whether we should be trying to make, like, Brundlefly a thing that actually exists. You don't want to do that.
That seems...
Why do they do that? Who gets it into their head that they're going to start swapping things around between humans and flies? How many more examples that's a bad idea could you possibly need?
Yeah, there's so many other awesome insects out there that...
Katydids?
Yeah.
Your praying mantis?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the whole devouring of the male species after coitus.
True. No, that's a fair point.
Can kind of cause some issues. But seriously, like the flies, the longevity of a cockroach or the ability to adapt to its environment, I think would be a healthy one. I mean, if flies crawl around in like less than pleasant matter, cockroaches would be a totally viable suggestion as well.
No, that's it. No, see, that's a good idea. If they like a thing with cockroaches, because then we could create, then we could become impervious.
Yeah.
But they're always pairing us with stuff that it's like you don't want to be, you know? Like they're always saying, well, we've combined. Like for some reason, it's always white mice. Every time that they're experimenting with human stuff, it's always combining human whatever with white mice. And it's like that. White mice don't really have any attributes that I envy. There's really nothing white mice can do. White mice, their special skill seems to be dying horribly at a young age in a laboratory while being jabbed by some dick in a lab coat.
Aside from their penchant for cheese, I don't really see a whole lot of like comparisons betwixt the two.
And apparently their inability to evade capture.
Yeah.
Because you always just see them in a cage going, ah, crap,
What do you expect? I'm a mouse.
I wasn't going to do this until somebody started. I believe the town you were referencing earlier is called Worcester.
Worcester, did but I, say I
was
Worcestershire?
Gonna, yeah, but I was yeah. gonna leap. But see, no, but I left it deliberately to irritate people from the East Coast.
The thing is, I am from the East Coast, so I should know. I should know that specifically. So feel free to rain the hate down.
No, it's Worcester because our longtime friend Kristen from accounting was from Worcester, and it was like every time I would say Worcester or whatever. Because that's one of those stupid things like Leicester Square, where where they've just decided to ignore letters.
Yeah.
Like, why are the letters there if you're not going to pronounce them? I have no idea why would you bother to, are they like spare letters in case like you need vowels later? We'll just store them in the middle of this other word. Makes no sense at all.
And it's always one of those places where there's a common mispronunciation where people become more and more sensitive to it. Obviously, Oregon, people are getting annoyed by it, people pronouncing it Oregon.
Right.
I'm from Lancaster, which there is no G. It's Lancaster. But people who are from Lancaster prefer pronounce it Lancaster as if there is a G in there.
Wait a minute. So people who are from there?
Yeah. We're allowed. We're from there. We're allowed to kind of like input a G At will, apparently.
I guess I'm thinking of the Lancaster thing. Because it's a point of pride with me that I always say Lancaster because I was corrected by somebody from there when I said Lancaster. She's like, Lancaster. And so it's always been one of those things that I'm... But then I met somebody who was from there who insisted that there was no universal... that there was no universality. That she said that some people there call it Lancaster. And yeah. I didn't know if she was just screwing with me or not.
No, absolutely not. No, I've always pronounced it Lancaster, but yet spelled it without the G.
It's all very weird.
Yeah.
All right. So. Mice. You're listening to a Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. This is your Science on the March.
German-Italian research team has assembled an array of solid-state sensors to distinguish the subtle aromas emitted from certain fungi, toxic fungi, that infect cereal grains worldwide. On average, the electronic nose sniffing out of the toxic fungi, 94% of which report I just...
Oh, yeah. So this is like our thing can smell if you're, if like wheat is getting all... weird or wonky or something.
Yes, this Enos had more trouble measuring the severity of infections, though, and misclassified heavy.
You have no idea what you're reading.
I don't. I really don't. And I'm taking a run at it, so I'm thinking like maybe if I read it faster.
It's like you're trying to mud bog through. You're just like, if I just put this hammer down here and just go 30 miles an hour, I can make it through this pit.
Yeah, there's nothing but chunks of information kind of flying inadvertently behind me.
No, I'll make it to the other side.
And somewhere good. You can hear a very contented Dawn Taylor kicking back wherever she may be. Just like, job secure for yet another day.
Well, I don't want to speak ill of people who aren't here. Let's just say that correct pronunciation and, in fact, knowledge of science or a grasp of anything contained in any of the stories we read is not really like a requirement for either of us.
Okay.
It's not really. Neither chair here requires an absolute understanding or knowledge of these stories. I will say that the thing about fungus and about being able to identify them, this is actually has a personal relevance because just last night, so I did... I'll tell the rest of this for next hour. But last night I had this moment where I was like getting ready to eat something, and I had this long, and it was late at night, and I had this long moment of looking at it, and my wife was asleep, so I didn't have anybody to ask, and I couldn't tell if the food was discolored because it had some sort of a flavoring on it, or if it was in fact covered with a lethal mold. But if that embarrassing thing of like I was hungry enough, I didn't care finally, and I'm just like, well, I guess I'll see what happens. And then here I am. So, and I'm not dead as of 12:41.
Well, and you know, if you want to take a nitpicker's mentality towards it, you know, penicillin, a lot of medicines based around the fact that someone somewhere realized, hey, this mold is actually kind of good for us and helps us defend against infections and various other illnesses from stuff that, you know, doesn't look as displeasing as your standard mold spore does.
So now I'll be free of gangrene on the inside.
Yeah. At the porn store that I work, we were going through our candy vending machine, restocking it, and a lot of stuff will get left there for a considerable amount of time. And the thing is, I didn't realize that, you know, chocolate and chocolate.
Who buys candy at a porn store?
You would be surprised. And the thing is, more people buy like Funyuns and Corn Nuts than they would say your average a Hershey bar. But a lot of chocolate had been left there for a while, and it's something I never realized that eventually, left alone, chocolate does go bad.
It turns white and powdery.
Yeah, which I didn't realize because I never really imagined chocolate sticking around long enough to go bad. It's like finding out if cocaine expires.
Why doesn't it
tend to sort of hang around that long?
Why does it turn white? Actually, that's a weird thing because it does get that white powdery exterior. I wonder if that's the oil. I don't know, drying or something. If there's some sort of something on the, because there must be something changing. There's some chemical change that happens on the outside.
I guess the milk, chocolate, or the milk in it, kind of going south, or whatever. Maybe it's the cheese from the chocolate or the milk, kind of extruding through. I have no idea.
Hey.
But whenever we do re-up the vending machine, whoever's doing it offers whatever who is currently working. What's your favorite candy? Here's a freebie, whatever, here's for doing a good job. But I open up a one of them, and it was covered in that mysterious white film. So we realize, okay, these have gone bad. Try another one, same thing. So I skip to, Kit Kat. Also, same story. The majority of the candy had been left in there for so long that all of it had gone bad. So we basically harvested all the old stuff out, put in all the fresh candy. And so we're like, well, what are we going to do with all this, this uneatable chocolate? There's a bus stop right out front. We have a lot of tweakers in the area.
Ah, yes.
They were giving it to me to kind of to get rid of. So I take it out to the bus stop. And then very much like a candy shop display, I arranged all the chocolate so it looked as aesthetically pleasing as possible. Also that was left out there that day was a banana, still in the peel, and a Clif Bar. And so I put it out there, went in, finished out the last 20 minutes of my shift, got done, and walked out to that same bus stop, not 20 minutes later, every last chocolate bar, including the one that was open, displaying the fact that it was white and moldy, was all gone.
Oh, yeah.
But still there, the banana, still in the peel, still, like, unspoiled, and the Clif Bar, also unmolested.
The Clif Bar surprises me that would be left behind.
Well, I guess, I don't know how
they're not angling for protein, probably.
No, they're not looking for, like, hiking fuel.
No, they're really not.
Interesting note there.
Excellent. That is your Science of the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric, or you can call 503-252-1609. In just a couple minutes, we'll do your entertainment news and so forth. Let's do another piece of let's pick a random piece of sound from the sound pile, from the stack of sound. We'll just do a random story with auditory elements to it. Big Jim Willigan for Don Taylor today, and he speaks now.
Young children who watch a lot of violent television programming are at higher risk for developing sleep disorders. A new study from the Seattle Children's Research Institute looked at 600 kids between the ages of 3 and 5 years old. Researcher Michelle Garrison says that the sleeping problems range from frequent nightmares and trouble falling asleep to difficulty getting up in the morning and remaining alert during the day.
Things that we found that really increased the risk of those sleep problems were watching media with violent content and any media use in the evenings, regardless of what the content was.
I've thought about this a lot, actually, that I wonder, and I haven't read anything about this, and I don't really, I mean, as I think we've just demonstrated, I don't know anything about science. I know nothing about birth and no babies or understand and know science. But we spend a lot of, as The Onion once said, Americans now spend like 95% of their day staring at illuminated squares. But I do wonder if that is like somehow subtly reorientating our sleep cycles, in that you're basically exposed to a miniature sun, a miniature light source. You know, like those boxes that you can get like during the winter that are like light boxes that you sort of like, you like Lacey Turner had one of those in her. And it simulates the sun, and it's supposed to help with seasonal affective disorder because it's basically, and they have actually went through like, they're like weird, like little photo booths basically, where you almost like, you has like a little draping, and you actually will just kind of put the draping over your head, and you'll actually just put your face in there, and it just, it's a glowing square, and it sort of just gives you, it saturates you with light for like 10 minutes. It's supposed to simulate sunlight. And so you, if you're like looking at an iPad or something, like right up until the moment you go to sleep, I wonder if that is like, if it seems like you're going to bed in the middle of the day to your brain.
Yeah. Well, and also, I'm sure there's going to be an app for that, the artificial sunlight generating app that you could download for your iPad or your iPhone, where you basically, you just install it, hit the button, and then it's supposed to simulate sunlight so you can kind of sort of rub it all over your body like a bar of soap almost. So, well, like you said, like the light box.
Oh, I see, but not actually rubbing it. Yeah, but like figuratively rubbing it.
Yes, an app for your iPad.
That actually
do the same thing.
That would not surprise me actually if they modified the light somehow to sort of maybe to be more like sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if sunlight doesn't have a color, I guess, but I mean to have some sort of a weird, or they could have a thing where it's like you set up your iPad and then it actually subtly, it slowly illuminates. And then slowly deluminates, or whatever the word is, darkens.
Yes.
Just simulate maybe they could do that with like the alarm clock, you know, where maybe you put the iPad next to your bed on the little easel or whatever, and in the morning they probably have this already. Because on my phone, I use my iPhone as my alarm, and it's got their see, somebody says, who's to say there isn't a Lightbox app? Way ahead of us they are.
Uh-huh.
But on my I have this this app that simulates actually a real life alarm clock I've had for years. I have this thing. It's the gayest name. It's called a Zen clock, and it's. But the deal
does it
is,
wear a turban and have little turned up shoes?
Yeah, it just sits in the corner sipping herbal teas.
And judging you.
But the thing is that it chimes really, really quietly, and then gradually chimes louder. And the idea is that you're not going, "Ah, I'm awake," you know.
Yeah.
That it like you gradually wake up, so it doesn't like jolt you out of your REM cycle. So I've got an alarm on my phone that basically does the same thing, but they could have one of those that actually gradually, where it gradually brightens the screen to sort of simulate the rising of the sun outside your window, like maybe during wintertime. That makes a lot of sense.
No, and it's something that I've always sort of been suspicious of, is those people that, like, I can only awake to the sound of that ratcheting, like, beeping sound that just is, like, the most heinous sound, imaginable.
Yeah.
That you're going from, like, a very, very relaxed state
to worst.
Instantly starting your day in a very agitated kind of, like, eh. But there are some people that's the only way that they can be awoken.
Here's what mine sounds like. Let's see. This is just a little bit, a little bit of a demonstration. So this is what mine sounds like, but it's this very, very quietly, and then it gradually gets louder. It's a so it's that.
Yeah.
It's a bell, but it's so quiet you can barely hear it, and then it gradually over, and you can actually tell it. Like, I want to take 20 minutes for this to become audible, or 15 minutes, or 5 minutes, or whatever. And so over the course of, like, 9 minutes, it gradually becomes louder. I'll just read this without comment. In the text box, it says, I call BS on any study that says violence causes sleep problems. If anything, violence helps you sleep. Sleep forever. Sleep with the fishes, perhaps.
Well, and it's one of these things where...
I wasn't without comment, I'm sorry.
They needed a study for this. They needed to say that kids who are sort of bathed in gore and just horrifying images are going to have difficulty relaxing and allowing their body to, you know, enter sleep comfortably and then wake up refreshed the next day. They should be looking for the kids that can actually fall asleep and wake up refreshed the next day, because that's tomorrow's serial killers.
Seriously, yeah.
Just, you know?
You're still covered in the stains of their victims.
Yeah.
Just,
you know, my sleeping mask made of the face of my victims, you know.
That's really the only way I can sleep.
Yeah, like the white noise machine is just like one of those Halloween tapes of, like, chains rattling and people screaming in a mansion somewhere.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Let us do our entertainment news if we have that.
Yeah.
Here is your entertainment news for Tuesday.
Hugh Hefner's new squeeze. Hugh Hefner is mending his broken heart over Crystal Harris with a new lady. Shara Breachford is both our November 2011 playmate and my new girlfriend, tweeted Hefner on Monday. Breachford is 27. Hefner is about almost 4 times that. He's 85.
It is. Well, it's like, to use your analogy earlier, it is like the Kleenex thing where it's like you just pop one out and the other one just, you know, it's like the straw dispenser at Chuck E. Cheese. You take a straw, the next one just rolls into place.
I honestly see, at this point, when does Playboy just become sad? I mean, I know we passed that exit a couple of miles back, but it really, who wants to know about an 85-year-old guy getting lucky at all?
Well, I do, if only to realize that, you know, that is one possible outcome, you know, to one's life when one is 85 years of age. Here's a really awkward thing. If you look at the new Playboy, because, you know, she canceled the wedding like 3 days beforehand. They were going to get married on like a Sunday, and I think on Tuesday or on the Friday before, she's like, I get cold feet for whatever reason. But if you look at the new Playboy, every single page is just, congratulations, Hef, and like, and every and all of the advertising is like clients, all this third party advertising, clients have these huge, you know, Glenn Livett wants to congratulate Hugh and like girl on getting married, and it's like everybody just forked out all of this money to be part of the wedding celebration, and it's like the entire magazine, and she's on the cover, she's like the centerfold or something, like the entire mag, it's like one big, it's like, you know, it's just like one huge like a 120 page digest of failed promises and regret.
Oh man. Yeah, so I think at this point we just need to understand that these women serve only in a caregiving capacity.
Sexual hospice.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Making him as comfortable as possible until he eventually just slips away into physiological flaccidness.
Seriously, but it's like, who, you know, I used to be in that camp where I would just say, oh, Hefner, it's, you know, it's pathetic. He's 85 or whatever. And it's, you know, and I think I've kind of come around on that. You know, for the same reason, like, I used to be that way with rock stars, too. I used to, you know, it's like people, like the Rolling Stones would go on tour and people, you know, and people make all the obligatory jokes about, you know, oh, every DJ in the world goes, oh, it's sponsored by Depends, you know, wah, 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 and whatever. Yeah. And it's like I finally, and I'm and actually I came to this conclusion a couple years ago, but I'm just now reading that book by Keith Richards, his autobiography. And he actually just says at one point, he's like, you're not in the Rolling Stones. F you. I'll decide when I quit. Die, you know? Jackass. No one tells me when to quit. I'm Keith Richards. Who are you? I'll keep playing as long as I want to keep playing. You should shut up is what you should do. And he just said, you know, he said the same thing. He's like, hey, what? He's like, I'm a guitarist in a band. That's what I do. I play guitar with my band, and I will continue to do that until they drag me out. But I kind of came to that conclusion too. That it's, you know, who am I to tell a guy to, you know, to quit doing what he does?
Yeah.
Same thing with Hugh Hefner. So I'm okay with it. I really am.
Well, yeah, but the same thing with the story we just had about Susan Campbell looking like every girlfriend that was.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's like how many times you gotta hear about Grandpa? Like, I got me a new filly. I hooked her at the AARP rally. She was getting signatures, and
I think you'll feel differently about that when the cold specter of death is much closer to you, Jim Willick.
You know what? I you know, it's better to burn out than to fade away. You know, in the words of the Kurgan.
I don't know that that's true.
Yeah.
I think people. Here's we're getting. Unbelievable. We're getting all heavy-handed and philosophical about it, but I think that is a thing that is much easier to believe when fading away is far, far in the distance.
Yeah,
I think I think it's like that whole like. I think that whole, like, as Henry Rollins called it, the whole adolescent. You know, what did he call it? He called it the adolescent pseudo Jim Morrison journal entries of his youth,
yeah.
Where he was, you know, I walk side by side with the grim specter of death every day, with the bleak hand of mortality my only guide through this facade that is life. And
so you should be playing the Sabotage band underneath.
Totally,
that.
And he said that's a thing that you say like when you're young and when death is a thing that you can't really understand or conceive. And that you don't have any idea what the Grim Reaper actually is like. And he said, but, you know, like the first time you have to go in for a prostate exam, he's like, you realize that you wake up and death is a guy just sitting next to your bed every day going, how are you feeling? You know, and he's, you know, wakes up, who are you? Oh, death, die, you know. And I think that the burning out becomes much less attractive once, like, you have to actually pay that bill.
I think it's a little different, though, when you're dealing with someone like, say, like Don Rickles. Where, you know, he can be 85 or 89 or whatever and still do what he does and what he's been known for, which is just tearing people apart and just being a horrible human being that everyone loves. You know, if your thing is being like a sexual entity, at some point in time, that clock gets punched.
I guess that's true.
You get your golden watch and you go away.
No,
like,
that's
if anything,
true.
They need a new Hugh. Hugh needs to go out and find possibly a stand-up comedian from Portland, Oregon,
he
who has a beard.
Pass it on like
currently.
The Phantom.
Yeah, like hand off the ring, the big Playboy bunny like silhouette ring, to a new generation. He can still sit in the back like the guy at the bar who's just got like a whiskey and like a little sifter or something. You know, he is the grand poobah. He's still king. But you are still at the upright, learning from him. He needs to pass on.
No, this makes a whole lot of sense. No. I can see this now. Yeah, this being a thing that is passed down from generation to generation, and then you are the Padawan, and then you become the, and then you train like an apprentice, and then a journeyman, and then when he passes, you know, you look at the heaven and heavens, and you hold his sword aloft, and you say, you know, long the king is dead. Long live the king.
Exactly.
All right. So, no, I'm with you on that. Okay, I can see that.
So Hugh, pack it in, and you know, call me for God's sakes. I'd be more than happy.
I didn't see where we were going with that right away, but now I understand that it all makes so much more sense. We got like 30 seconds here.
Okay. Let's see here. We'll just cut to Charlie Sheen's character on Two and a Half Men may be killed off when the sitcom begins its new season. Reports TMZ. The case of Charlie Harper, obviously Sheen's death, is yet to be determined by the show's writers. Ashton Kutcher will be replaced. Facing Sheen on the show, so attention, future train wrecks of America.
You know, it would be great if they. Here's the thing, though, is like, you know, the killing off his character still wouldn't stop the character from coming back.
No, of course not.
Nothing can stop the Sheen.
No,
at this point.
Yeah, if anything, it'll be like the rumors of my overdose have been greatly exaggerated.
On that note, ladies and gentlemen, folk, we hold on a second. Wait, there we go. We bring down the curtain on this, another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk. Mr. Big Jim Willigan for Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show next hour. Thank you for joining us. And as always, you can get this program as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. Also available via iTunes and on your mobile device at mobile.cascadia.fm. We will see you on Wednesday. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Have a safe and satisfying day. We will see you tomorrow at noon for another episode of Legion of News.